Okay, we're talking about communication. And we've been doing some generalized talking. We're going to finish that up today. And then, oh, Laura, where's Laura today? Do we know?
I don't know. Unless she had some kids and just couldn't make it today.
Yeah. We stopped on the kind of in the middle of page 17. And I think you have page 17. I intended for you to have page 17, but I got lost. I'm not sure you do. You do? Okay, great. We're talking about being an example and how what we do influences others. And the easiest way to talk about it, I think, is just how she's done here, talking about our children and how we tell them one thing, but if we do something else, what's the likelihood that they're going to follow our words?
Not very
slim. And raise your hand if that was the easiest thing for you to do, was to do exactly what you needed to do all the time.
Heavy hands here.
I haven't seen a lot of hands. It wasn't the easiest thing for me. I knew what I wanted them to do. And I knew why I wanted them to do it. But making sure that I stayed on that path was tough. And what I found in my own life was it made me a much more strict parent than maybe I would have been had I not kept thinking about, but what if I did that? You know, I was the mean, awful parent that wouldn't let the kids do anything. But I think you have to be, because as you go along, things come in and they eat at that. And if you start out weak or with nibbles, you're never going to make it. And I've used this example many times about how Wednesday night services used to be really hard for me because of traveling so much for my work. But not after I got here. It was just the traveling that made it hard. But I always knew that I couldn't just say, well, it's too hard. I don't want to do it. Because what does that tell your child? Well, anything can get in the way. Anything's more important. You know, it doesn't matter. Now, probably part of this is because I grew up with a woman that if you weren't thrown up, you went to school. It didn't matter what else was going on. So that could have something to do with the way I felt about it. But I think as parents, or as examples to anyone, and we are examples, you know, you've heard people say, I don't want to be a role model. It doesn't matter. If somebody else decides you are, then they're watching you. They're knowing what you're doing. So our example has to be one of steadfastness, stalwartness, straight on the path, always looking to the goal. And that's really hard to do sometimes. I don't know about you, but there are days I wake up, I'd like to just pull the cover over my head, go back to bed, and just forget all that stuff that's out there. But as a Christian, we can't do it. I was talking to my cousin yesterday, the one that's in the nursing home, and we've had a disappointment in some moving of her that we were going to do. But she said, it's always something. I said, well, you know, it is. And it was for me today at home. I went to the doctor for this finally, and she's out of town for a week. And then I went to the drugstore to pick up a sample kit that I'm supposed to be. Oh, they don't have them. They'll have to order them. Every little thing, none of which were big. But by the time it piles on all day long, you're just kind of at the end of your rope. And Stan talked about this the other day. What happens to us sometimes in our communication when we've had that kind of day? I had all these errands, and every place I went wouldn't do what I wanted them to do. What happens then when you come home sometimes?
It's not pleasant.
It can be unpleasant. It's that kick the cat thing. Yeah. You know, you come home and yell at the kids, and the kids kick the dog, and the poor dog hadn't done anything. So it's reactionary. And as we go on down in this lesson, it talks about the last paragraph under the do as I say, not as I do says, to begin with a very basic example, every time you walk into a room, you communicate a distinct impression without saying a word. So what if you've had that day that I had the other day? How is it likely that you'll walk into the house if you don't stop and think about it? I could slam the door and make people feel better.
And you're not going to be smiling.
That's right. I'm not going to be smiling. You can't make me smile. Because I've had a bad day. Well, what happens to the people in your home? when they have the door slams and you're stomping in. And they haven't even seen you yet.
They're running for
cover. Yeah. They want to get out of the line of fire. And so maybe they've had a bad day too. Have you helped them with your attitude? And what's likely to happen then for many people? Maybe not everybody. You're coming home in a bad mood. They've had a bad day.
It's going to be a fight.
It's going to be a fight or a disagreement or some kind of unpleasantness, even if it's not a full-blown fight. And the thing is, so many of those could be avoided by just, before you walk in and slam the door behind you, taking a breath and reminding yourself that the person on the other side didn't do any of those things that made you so crazy during the day. It's not their fault. But we tend to be in a hurry, and we just want to go with it. And sometimes we want somebody to understand how bad we feel, and that's okay, but there's a better way to do it than to stomp in and be mad. And it says you could project a feeling of peace and cheerfulness, or nervousness and discontent, anger, boredom. What else could you put into your actions without ever saying a word? Can you tell when your spouse or your child or your good friend comes in how they feel?
Yeah, but the countenance on their face a lot of times.
By the way, what's on their face, by the way they walk, by the way they move things out of their way to get by. I was talking to my sister the other day, and I said something, and she got very quiet. She didn't say a word, and I knew she didn't like what I said, because she got very quiet. She didn't say anything to me. She did in a minute, but right then I knew that we'd have to discuss that further because she was unhappy. So it's not enough to say, well, I didn't say anything. Because sometimes we can speak volumes out of without saying anything. So the next piece says, mirror, mirror on the wall. Look in the mirror tonight. Try to assess honestly what your appearance communicates to others. Do your eyes reflect the abundant life offered by Christ in John 10:10? Does your face display the rejoice evermore attitude of Paul, 1 Thessalonians 5:16? Does your posture manifest your confidence and hope in Christ that Hebrews talks about? Paul summed it up by saying that Christ shall be magnified in my body, Philemon 1:20.
That's Philippians.
Is it?
Yes.
I didn't pull that one. Thank you. I'm not sure that's exactly... Would you read that for me, Pat? Because I don't think that's exactly what he's talking about, but I think we could probably stretch it and use it here. But I don't think that's what's in that context. I wish somebody would tell me what the proper abbreviation is for Philippians and Philemon. How do you know?
I wish I put an L behind two Philippians and put a PI to find them, but I don't know. There's so many.
One and 120.
According to my earnest expectations and hope, and in nothing I should be ashamed, but with all boldness as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death.
So what he's really talking about there is not being afraid to show Christ in our everyday living, no matter what they might do to us. So I think that one's taken a little out of context. But I'm not sure it's a bad thing, because I do think that we can project to others. A long, long time ago, I went to school at Abilene Christian for one very long semester. Very long semester. I didn't like it at all. But mainly because I was the only person on my floor that got up and went to church on Sunday morning. All those other doors were closed and they were sleeping. Me, the only one. But what really irritated me was they had these Friday night devotionals. And the girls would sit around, they'd read scriptures, and they'd sing, and everybody would cry. They'd always cry, you know, about how grateful they were to have Christ in their life and all these, which are good statements. I didn't think they were true statements. But anyway, they would come to, I went to one, so I wasn't ever going back. They would come and try to get me to come to devotional. But it's such a good thing in your life, and it's a way to study. I said, you people cry all the time. Everything I read tells me Christians are supposed to be the happiest people on the face of the earth. So I don't get it. I don't know why you're crying all the time. Well, we're just touched. We're not touched enough to get up to church Sunday morning, so go away. And I wouldn't go down to the Friday night shows because they cried all the time. Now, do I mean that sometimes it's not touching? And we did, yes. I mean, there are songs that touch me. There are scriptures that when we're reading them, I tear up because it's a huge thing that Christ did for us. So I don't mean to give the impression that I don't think you should be emotional about it. But I thought they were being emotional for each other. So I wasn't happy. I was letting go. And they thought it was pretty much a heathen. So I came home. Lived at home for a while longer. It's been said that at age 20, a woman can't help the way she looks, but at the age of 40, there's no excuse, for by then her life will be written on her face. I'm not sure I agree with that either. I find that very discouraging, actually. But I do think our face communicates how we lived and what we've done, and I do think if we've had the peace that Christ gives us, we may be able to project more of that in our bodies. I have a friend who one time told me that his sister, he was saying something about how hard it was for him to make friends easily. And his sister said, "We look like mean people. Look at our faces." And truly, she was right. They had sharp, angular faces. They had deep creases here. And they weren't mean people. But when you first saw them, they looked angry all the time. And she said, "That's, people don't want to approach us because we look like mean people." And I thought that was really sad. I think I might have to go get some of those Botoxed or something. Yep. If I really thought it made people not talk to me.
Smile's contagious.
Yeah, a smile is contagious.
And a hello is also.
It is.
And how are you?
It's so easy to, and you know, we talked last time about my little experiment at the congregation down by Houston. And these people were friendly people. They just allowed themselves to get so involved with that group that they were in that they didn't see me. And I don't think it was a deliberate, "Oh, I'm not going to talk to that person." But I think we have to be very careful about that. We have particular friends here that we only get to see some, you know, a couple of times a week. We want to catch up with them. We want to go see what's going on. I mean, when Mona's here, I'll go straight to her and kind of ignore everybody else. We went to high school together, and I want to catch up and see what's going on. But we have to be cautious that we're not leaving somebody out that maybe really needs that encouragement that day. And I don't mean just visitors. Maybe it's somebody in the congregation that's standing by themselves. Maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not. And we need to see what's going on and make a contact. Roger and I were eating the other day at a little club that we belong to. It's impossible. But there were three people eating there, obviously seniors, sitting by themselves on the same table but far enough away where they wouldn't have to interact. And we said, you know, I think what we're going to do the next time we come here is to make it our goal to sit with some of these people and try to encourage them to be more open to people coming, because part of the benefit of when you're an elderly person and being out is being with people, not just the food. It's the communication. So that's going to be our goal, to be nosy neighbors. Psychologists claim, I'm age 18 now, that there are at least 10,000 nonverbal symbols. Now, I'm not sure that's completely true, but there are a whole lot of them we use on a regular basis that we don't think about, that we've learned from the tiniest time. What does this mean? Either that's kind of true throughout the world. There are a few cultures that means goodbye. A few. But most of them, it means come here. What does that mean? What? That's pretty much true universally, because, yeah, what does that one mean? Don't come any closer. Stop what you're doing. Whatever it is, don't do it anymore.
Talk to the hand.
Talk to the hand. Is it your lesson? I had a coworker when I was teaching kindergarten. She had a big plastic ear on her wall, and the kids go, "Miss," and she said, "Go tell the ear and I will listen after school." Talk to that ear a lot. It's a great trick. Yeah, it worked really well. I'm not sure how far past five it would work, but it worked for five-year-olds. So it's really important that we understand that our gestures and our bearing, our countenance, all those things make an impression. Levi, I had him at home the other day, and he can't talk very much yet. But he wanted some more cheese crackers, and he came and he patted my knee, he went over there and he pointed to the cabinet they were in. So we learn gestures. We learn to communicate very, very early before our mouths can even work. The secret of inner peace thing, I didn't much like what she wrote here because I didn't like her example. She said she was at this greenhouse and somebody was unhappy, and then she saw her at church and was surprised that she was a Christian. Well, I don't think it's disallowed to be unhappy. I think how we handle our unhappiness is incredibly important. And if we are not Christ-like in our behavior when we're unhappy, then that's absolutely positively wrong. But I think just to say someone was unhappy, I'm unhappy when they put the wrong thing in my sack that I bought, you know. But that doesn't mean I get to dump it out on the floor and scream and yell at people. I just have to say, this isn't what I ordered. You know, we need something else. So I didn't think that was a great example. And then, of course, there's the, have you hesitated to put a Herald of Truth sticker on your car? Knowing that if you did, you would have to observe the speed limit more conscientiously. I don't like anything about that statement. I don't like the Herald of Truth sticker. I don't like the fact that just because somebody's watching means you have to be more conscientious about obeying the law, because God didn't tell us when it suits you, obey the law. So I don't like anything about that statement. On page 19, she starts with, please do not touch. She's talking about the importance of touch. There's lots and lots of research that reveals how important it is for people to be touched. In fact, one study I read one time said that elderly women who live alone, particularly quite elderly women who live alone, who don't have as much ability to be out in the community, that massage is one of the best things that they can do simply because it involves human touch and another person being in their life. So touch is real important to us. I hardly can walk past any of my children without touching them somewhere. Now, when they were younger, it used to be like that, but now it's a little more gentle. Again, I think this is a really good book. I think she has some very interesting things in here, but I think she takes things a little too far at times. Like she said, Christ touched the leper. Now, I do think that speaks to us. But to say it meant more to him than anything might not be true. The fact that he was healed probably meant more to him than anything. But I get her point.
It was that culture also.
Right. But in our country, we tend to not touch nearly as much as in other places of the world. Is that different where you are now?
It is, actually.
Tell them where you are.
We moved to St. John Virgin Islands last year. We bought a restaurant, and so we've been there a year. And one of my concerns was, being from Texas, I've been in education, so I'm a hugger, and eye contact, and talk to you when you walk in the door. Most of the time you won't sneak by, and kids don't sneak by, period. So, you know. Most of our guests are from the East Coast and Northeast Coast, and so that was a concern. But we found out that they do love Texans, and they do like to visit with us. There have been a few crotchety old gentlemen that have come through and did not appreciate my husband's effort to make them smile or laugh, but the women are usually just loving it. And the kids love him dearly. They come by. If they're in the area, mm-hmm. parents will come saying, I was looking for you. And they're up there with Brent and I. So, smiles, welcoming. My husband's a hugger too, so I've cautioned him that you really need to be careful because they may turn around and slug you. But thus far, he's not been slugged.
Well, good, good.
And the older, if a group of women come in to eat dinner or anything, he just flirts with them, and they just flirt back, and it's all words, and it is precious.
Yeah.
And makes their day and makes their trip. We usually see them another time if they're there for any length of time. Mm-hmm. And everyone says they are glad to come back because we were so...
They felt welcomed.
Welcomed, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a friend from Maine come down and visit me one time, and we went to Stephenville to a rodeo. And on the way back, because he had never seen a rodeo, we stopped at the gas station. I went to the restroom. When I came out, he said, that man at the other gas pump said hello to me. I said, okay. And he said, why did he do that? I said, because you were standing there putting gas in the car. I guess. I don't know.
Well, we have some of that in the United States. When I was first in Memphis, Tennessee, in the service, you know, I was invited by a friend to come to dinner at her house. She had moved to Memphis and said I should bring a friend with me. So a friend that I had made there, we got on a streetcar and went out, but we had to walk several blocks. And on the way, we met a man. He was wearing a hat. We were walking on the sidewalk, and he tipped his hat and said hello, and I said hello to him. And she noticed me. She said, "Do you know him?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, why did you talk to him?" She thought I'd done a really bad thing. I'm from the South, and all the men all tip their hats and say
hello. That's right, and you should say hello back. It's only polite. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the difference in area.
It
she
is.
She was really appalled that I talked to a man I didn't know.
We have had single guests come in and eat, and we always visit with them and make them feel welcome, too. Mm-hmm. So
it's very hard to eat alone in public for most people. If you look around and see, most people who are eating by themselves have a book or their telephone or an iPad or something rather than having to make eye contact with people and look around. So it's a difficult thing, at least, again, in our culture. Now, you get over into the Middle East, and there's a lot more hugging and touching and kissing. And that can make people in our culture feel unwelcomed.
I won't talk too much, but we were over in Turkey for a while. And men over there, when they walk together, they hold hands. Mm-hmm.
And it's acceptable there.
Here we look at them really oddly.
We do. We do, but it's accepted
but that,
in the culture.
That's their culture.
So they have to learn these things before they come here to not grab the friend's hand to walk in the street. Some movie I saw that, I don't remember, Hugh Grant was in it, and he was looking for somebody, and the hotel manager gave him a little hint. He didn't actually tell him where she was. He jumped over the counter and kissed him on the cheek and runs away. Well, the very next moment, a Japanese customer comes up and he sets his things down. He jumps over the counter and kisses the guy because that's what he saw. That must be what we do in this culture. Sign language for the hearing. It says, has your husband or anybody ever asked what you were mad about? To which you responded, "I didn't say a thing." Yeah, well, you didn't fool me. It's page 20. Do y'all have a page 20? Oh, good. I tried to fix it after I realized that.
This one's used on me a lot.
Again, we show our emotions, most of us. You have to be quite the actor to be able to hide your body language emotions. And your eyes will tell a tale on you even physiologically. If you're very interested in something, your irises get bigger. And you can't make that not happen. And we talked about lie detector tests. They get your heart rate. They get the sweat that comes on. So your body's going to give clues, even if you're working hard at not doing it. Did y'all know that the reason the Southern girls were called bells was because they used to put belladonna in their eyes? And it's actually a poisonous plant if you ingest it, but it makes your irises expand. So they always looked interested at what the young man was saying. This was something they did before they went out. Just in the
side. They were never interested, but so they did. Yeah, like that boring back then.
That's too much trouble.
By the time they got those dresses on,
that's
they,
right. They needed really something. At the end of page 20, she talks about the Shunammite woman setting aside a room in her house for Elisha, the Philippian jailer taking people home, convicts, escaped convicts. So it talks about putting our theory of welcome into practice. What was that? Oh, Yvonne was telling me, my sister-in-law Yvonne, that she was visiting somewhere and they were having a potluck after and they invited her to come. And she said she opted not to since she didn't know anybody there. But she was pleased by the invitation. And I think sometimes we fail to do those kinds of things. I know one time I was visiting somewhere a long time ago, and I called to see if somebody could come pick me up. I was in a hotel. And the guy that was my friend at the time said, "You're going to let a perfect stranger come to me?" I said, "It'll be somebody's grandmother. You know, they won't send anybody scary, and it'll be okay." But he couldn't even begin to imagine that you would be in a strange city and you would call and ask somebody to come pick you up to go to church. So, yeah, the group discussion questions I like. How is an awareness of nonverbal communication valuable to you as a Christian? How can that help? If you just understand a little bit about nonverbal communication.
Just remember, it's an ageless thing. People have probably had the same type of communication forever.
Yeah.
And so, trust it.
Yeah. There's a reason that someone looks or acts that way. What if have you ever had that feeling that you've done something to hurt or annoy someone? They won't tell you. That's nonverbal. They're giving off something. And I think sometimes we just have to approach that in a very straightforward manner and say, "Are you upset with me? Have I offended you? Is something wrong? What can we do to fix it?" That's not comfortable, because then you're taking the chance that they're going to say, "Yes, you have, and here's why." That doesn't feel very good. What you really want them to say is, "Oh no, I'm just having trouble with my dog," or something. But you're offering yourself up that way. But it's probably the only way you're going to get to the root of the problem. And particularly in groups that are regularly together, such as a congregation of the Lord's people. If you don't fix those things, what happens over time?
It fester.
Fester. It gets worse and worse. And sometimes one or both people don't even know why, really, that they need to hash it out.
And if you are asked that, you need to be honest with
you. You do need to be honest.
And if it catches you off guard and you say it's just your dog at the time, you need to go back later when you figured out exactly how to say it and talk about it.
Right, because the other person's trying to figure it out. And we owe them. We owe them that. To maintain a grudge against someone, particularly when they're trying to react in a Christian manner and fix it, is wrong. It's just wrong. It's sinful. What does the Bible say about that if you have an issue with a brother? Go to him. So, there's none of us that can get away with saying, "Well, I just don't like her very much." Better get with it.
And there's no limit as to how many times we should try. It's an ongoing forever thing.
That's right. So, are there people that are more challenging for us? Sure, because we have different personalities. And I have some people in my life that it's not unpleasant for me to talk to. I just have to try harder because I don't know much about them. And, you know, I find myself in a little house of weather. But that's my problem. I need to learn about them. I need to spend some time with them.
I think it was Abraham Lincoln that said that. He and I kind of grew up together.
He did, so.
But as some man went by and he was with a friend, he said, "I have to get to know him better. I don't like him very well."
Yeah.
So he was going to fix it by getting to know
him. And the thing is, it often fixes it. Now, there are a few people it's going to be hard to like no matter what happens, but for the most part.
You have to love them anyway.
You have to love them anyway.
I'm working on you right now.
Well, you just keep working on it. What forms of nonverbal communication do our children find most bothersome in us? I know I've told you my children would say, "Why are you mad?" And I'm not. I'm thinking. I'm concentrating. But I get that look on my face. One of the things we talk about in early childhood is children need to see happy, smiling faces. So we put mirrors sometimes up for at the teacher level so that you see your face as you walk by. Go, "Well, wait. I need to be smiling. I'm busy concentrating on how I'm going to take care of these 12 kids in my care. But I need to be smiling for them." So remembering to think about how we're presenting ourselves is important. Now, I like number 4. To what extent is how others think of us a good criterion? It's not criteria, unless it's multiple criteria. Does it matter?
It should.
All right.
It affects your scope of influence with them, whether it's a short period of time or a long period of time. And we are, as women, first impressions are just so important and lengthy.
Absolutely. It's very difficult to change that person's vision.
And, of course, in my situation now, first impressions can change because I'm learning different cultures of people, of our guests. And once we visit with them and find out what part of the states they're from, or we've had overseas guests as well, real overseas guests. But you just have to give it up, so to speak. You react, and then you are forced to keep an open mind sometimes.
And what about kids? Because often it's kids who say this. I don't care what anybody thinks. Why should we?
Because we're Christians.
Because we're Christians.
And we're being watched, whether good or bad.
And we're telling people that we're following Christ.
It makes us feel better if we're trying to do right.
Right. But any of your kids ever said that to you? I know what I'm doing is okay.
And it's different if a teenager is responding that way because you know they're dealing with peer pressure and the influences of their friends.
And non-frontal lobe development.
When our kids pass the 20s and the 30s, and they still feel that way, you have to look at it differently.
You do. Because maturity should have taken over at that point. We do allow for immaturity, and it's not wrong to be immature if you're not old enough to be mature. I mean, it's a process. So we make allowances for that. We try to give explanations and show why it does matter. But like you said, Mona, for a fully grown adult to say, I don't care what anybody thinks, that in my mind, that's just rebellion against God. He says we have to care. He says we're a light to the world. And if you're saying, I don't care if I'm a light or not, I think you better reread. So it does matter what people think. And we're to abstain from the very appearance of evil. The very appearance of evil. Not, was it wrong? Did it sort of look like it might be wrong? Don't do that. And I think it all goes back to that influence we have on other people. Because if you know what you're doing is right with God, then you're probably not going to sway. But if you're giving the impression, maybe you're taking 15 people down with you. So it is a good criterion to an extent. Now, on the other side of it, you're living a Christian life, you're setting a good example, and people don't like you. Does that matter?
It's not going to change my following Christ.
Right. So in that circumstance, what people think of us is not a good reason to change.
But your conversation with those people must be spot on.
Yeah.
It can't waver either. But it must be said in love,
right,
or you push them away.
Right. If they won't hear anything else, then you've lost them. It's a delicate balance. We all know that. Let's skip down to number 9. What are some nonverbal cues that a Bible teacher, public or private, should watch for in students? We're talking about that feedback there. What are you looking for if you're trying to study with someone? First of all, if you see glazed over eyes, you've lost them. You need to start somewhere else or start again. But what are some other cues?
Understanding and engaging in conversation. Maybe even questions.
Okay. They're giving you information back so that you know they heard and understood what you said.
And you may need to change your examples,
right,
or your stories for understanding.
Right. And I think it's particularly interesting when we have people who've not taught little people before. Sometimes they're not quite there, they can't push it down. So you have to ask questions. What does this mean to you? Because you'll get, Brad loves to tell the story on me that when I was little, I asked my parents, why did he bruise James? So, it didn't mean anything to me because nobody had explained what it was at that point in my life. So we have to ask questions. We have to get feedback and find out what they're thinking because they are not always thinking what we think they're thinking, that's for sure.
Well, they may need to know that we were singing the little song.
Yeah.
That's the reason you asked.
We are almost out of time, so I'm going to not go, because I don't know how far y'all got on chapter 3 when I was gone.
Not very far. We
so
got to the top of 25.
Okay.
Didn't get it started.
Okay. We'll start there next time. But I do want to, this little activity, concentrate on sending favorable nonverbal communication to someone this week. Someone you're supposed to, what are you grinning about, Sarah?
Because you said that and I just caught on to what you were talking about Hebrews and James.
Oh.
I didn't understand it at first.
B-R-U-I-S-E-D. Bruised. Concentrate on sending favorable nonverbal communication to someone you're close to. And let's think about that. And when we come back next week, let's see if we made any difference.
On the second part of number 9, whenever it's talking about what are some of the unconscious like verbal communications mm-hmm. we should be sending, my biggest one is whenever I'm talking to somebody about scripture and they are constantly like, I mean, they're engaged in the conversation because they're constantly arguing with what I say.
Yeah.
Is it just something internal I have to work on to not show my frustration? Because I know that I get angered easily when in conversation. That is something that I've
short answer, yes.
Have to try to figure
long
out.
Long answer is most of us have to deal with that because you are logically presenting what we know to be the truth and they're interrupting the stuff. And it's like somebody throwing confetti in your face all the time. You can't clear it out so you can talk. It's very frustrating. So short answer, yeah. Long answer, we're all working on it, Mama.
You have to remember that Satan's best tools are arguments and doubt and guilt.
Yep.
So just think, okay, I am arguing with Satan at this point, so what would my answers be?
And remember that when Christ said to
he did it
argue
too.
With Satan, what did he say? What did he start every answer with?
Scripture.
It's written.
It is written. I start saying it is said. And
the best thing to do, especially if this is someone you're in so often, let's sit down and open our Bibles.
Right.
If they're reading the scripture, you're trying to tell them they're not going to be arguing back.
Well, and you always have to start out with, do you believe the Bible is the Word of God? Do you believe that the Bible is how we live our lives? If they say yes, then you've got a pretty smooth path to go there. If they say no, that's a whole different ballgame.
And sometimes we don't remember the power of God's Word, too. And in the heat of battle, we're guilty of just slips also.
And I think we often don't remember the power of God's Word. The power of the gospel is incredible and amazing.
Yeah.
I was talking to Chris right before we came in, and she said, Kyle was asking me what the cameras were, and I said, well, they're just some security cameras, two of which are not working right now. And she said, so I was on camera when I was walking around the building the first time I was here, making sure there wasn't a volleyball net. She said, I had a checklist. If I saw a volleyball net, I was leaving. And there are people out there seeking the truth. I had a friend one time who, I ran into her before work, and she was sitting in her car reading her Bible, and so we talked for a few minutes, and she said, I just want to go somewhere that only talks about the book. And I said, have I got a deal for you? And she came, and she told me after that lesson with Stan, she said, it's the first sermon I've heard since I've been on this quest that I didn't want to stand up in the middle and go, that's wrong, it's not in the book. She said, everything he said was in the book. And I said, she was baptized not very long after that. So there are people seeking the truth, and we forget that because we see all these people around us who claim to be Christians, but they don't care what God says, really. They just want to wear the title. And we forget that they're honest seekers of truth.
Back to what you said, we need to remember we are not trying to win an argument, and it's very easy to get caught up
right
in that back and forth when we're talking to somebody else that's basically it sounds like trying to win an argument. So we need to step back and maybe say, look here, I'm not trying to win an argument. I'm trying to teach you and show you.
Show you where God said.
Exactly.
I often say, well, people say, well, why don't you listen to us? I really don't. God does. And here's where he says it. Because they don't care what I say, and they shouldn't. That's not what we base it on.